Welcome to SCOTUS-CAST. On April 15, 2008, the court decided United States v. Clintwood Exhorn Mining Company, holding that a taxpayer seeking a refund for an invalid tax under the Export Clause of the Constitution must comply with the Internal Revenue Code's provisions for seeking refunds, including its time limits, and cannot bring suit directly under the Export Clause and the Tucker Act. University of Minnesota law professor Kristen Hickman discusses the case. As always, the Federalist Society takes no position on particular legal or public policy issues. All expressions of opinion are those of the speaker. And now, Professor Hickman.
It is axiomatic in our legal system that you can't sue the government without its permission. The Clintwood Elkhorn mining case deals with a rather arcane competition between two statutes, the Internal Revenue Code and the Tucker Act, each of which offers limited but different waivers of sovereign immunity. The case originated with an export tax on coal adopted in 1978. 20 years later, the United States District Court for the Eastern District of Virginia, in a case called Ranger Fuel Corporation v. United States, declared the coal export tax unconstitutional as a violation of the Export Clause in Article 1 of the United States Constitution. The federal government decided not to appeal the district court's decision in Ranger Fuel, and the IRS officially acquiesced to Ranger Fuel in 2000. Various coal producers and exporters who had been paying the tax all those years then sought to recover at least some of the taxes they had paid, plus interest. Internal Revenue Code Section 7422 and related code provisions generally require taxpayers seeking refunds to file an administrative claim for refund before proceeding to judicial review. And the code also imposes a 3-year limitation period on refund claims. The taxpayers here accordingly filed their refund claims with the United States for 3 years' worth of taxes paid, in this case 1997 through 1999, and received their refunds accordingly. The Tucker Act has a 6-year limitations period, however, so the taxpayers sued the government under the Tucker Act seeking a refund for the previous 3 years, 1994 through 1996. The taxpayers had not filed an administrative refund claim for those earlier years because they knew those years fell outside the Internal Revenue Code's limitation period. So the issues in this case raised were whether the taxpayers were limited to the administrative relief provided by the Internal Revenue Code or whether they could bring a separate Tucker Act claim. The government argued that the Internal Revenue Code Section 7422 and related code provisions represent a specific and directly applicable remedial scheme that trumps the more general Tucker Act. The taxpayers tried a few arguments to get around that limitation. First, they argued that the Constitution's Export Clause guaranteed a unique constitutional right that should support an action for monetary damages under the Tucker Act, notwithstanding the Internal Revenue Code's limitations on refund actions, and that the Tucker Act was uniquely situated to remedy Export Clause claims. The taxpayers also claimed more broadly a constitutional exception from the Internal Revenue Code's administrative refund procedures. For this latter proposition, they analogized Internal Revenue Code Section 7422 with the Code's Anti-Injunction Act provision, Code Section 7421, which generally precludes any suit for the purpose of restraining the assessment or collection of any tax from being maintained in any court. Since Enix v. Williams Packing and Navigation Company, which the Supreme Court decided in 1962, and even before that, the Supreme Court has recognized an exception from the Code's Anti-Injunction Act provision where the tax assessments at issue are so wholly without foundation that the tax is, in the eyes of the law, only in the guise of a tax. Essentially, the taxpayers in Clintwood Elkhorn Mining analogized this exception from the Code's Anti-Injunction Act to claim that the same sort of exception should prevail with respect to administrative refund procedures and that the coal export tax that gave rise to the taxpayer's refund claim should fall within that exception. Relying on its earlier precedent, the Federal Circuit Court of Appeals sided with the taxpayers in this case, but the Supreme Court, in a unanimous opinion, reversed the Federal Circuit in favor of the government, holding that the plain language of the Internal Revenue Code limited refund claims to those claims that are timely filed according to the Code's administrative refund process. Frankly, this outcome is not at all surprising. For more than 40 years since deciding Williams Packing, the Supreme Court has been very stingy about allowing judicial review of tax cases outside the limitations imposed by the Internal Revenue Code, and the Court correspondingly has been quite restrictive in interpreting those limitations. Notwithstanding its recognition of an exception for tax assessments so beyond the pale that they are only in the guise of a tax, as compared to earlier jurisprudence, Williams Packing, cited by the taxpayers here, actually represents a narrowing of the Court's equitable jurisdiction in tax cases, to the point that the Supreme Court in 40 years has only allowed one tax case to proceed to judicial review without first satisfying the administrative procedure requirements for refund or deficiency actions. That case was South Carolina versus Regan, where the state of South Carolina was able to demonstrate that it was being harmed by an amendment to the Internal Revenue Code, but would never be in a position to pay taxes or penalties for noncompliance and sue for a refund. In particular, the Supreme Court several times has expressed reluctance to recognize a constitutional exception to the Anti-Injunction Act for the simple reason that it is too easy to fashion a tax claim into a constitutional one. Following the Supreme Court's lead, the lower courts have been similarly reluctant to extend jurisdiction in tax cases outside of refund and deficiency actions arising from the IRS administrative procedures and the Internal Revenue Code's limitations with respect to those procedures. The Supreme Court's opinion in Clintwood Elkhorn Mining is a straightforward application of the Court's own precedents dating back to Williams Packing. Focusing also on the text of Internal Revenue Code Section 7422 in particular, the Court notes with emphasis the language of that provision, that no suit shall be maintained in any court for the recovery of any internal revenue tax alleged to have been erroneously or illegally assessed or collected, or of any penalty claimed to have been collected without authority, or of any sum alleged to have been excessive, or in any manner wrongfully collected until a claim for a refund has been duly filed with the IRS. As the Court said in Clintwood Elkhorn Mining, five ennies in one sentence, and it begins to seem that Congress meant the statute to have an expansive reach. In sum, the circumstances of this case may seem somewhat harsh, as the taxpayers paid the unconstitutional export tax for 20 years and were only able to recover 3 years' worth, and the taxpayers came up with some very creative arguments to try to double their recovery through the Tucker Act. But this Court simply is not going to turn its back on 40 years of restrictive interpretation of the tax code's remedial provisions. The Court's position on these issues is arguably too restrictive. The Court's narrow approach to tax case remedies has had other negative implications. In a forthcoming article, I address critically the impact of the Court's interpretation of its Anti-Injunction Act provision on Treasury's compliance with Administrative Procedure Act notice and comment rulemaking requirements. Ultimately, though, the courts are simply unlikely to shift their position with respect to these issues, so the solution to the problem probably lies with Congress and not with the courts.
Thank you for listening to this episode of SCOTUSCast. For more episodes of SCOTUSCast, as well as audio and video from past Federalist Society events, please visit our website at federalistsociety.org/multimedia.